33. Looking death in the eye. For Modo, the fall from the sky and the events that followed had all happened with astonishing speed. He'd smashed through the pine and palm trees and landed on his back on the rainforest floor. A missing finger, his pinky, was his only major injury. He couldn't believe he hadn't suffered worse. Moments later, before he'd even had a chance to gather his wits, he was fleeing from a gang of tribesmen. And here he was, falling again, this time into a deep pit. Time had slowed, as though the grains of sand in an hourglass were dropping one by one. He counted the stakes. 16. Sharpened bamboo. He pictured the first time he'd seen Octavia in her green dress, the way she had looked as he clung to her arm, about to fall from the Hugo, her horrified face as he dropped past the Prince Albert. He concentrated. Unfortunately, his weight and speed would ensure that the stakes would pierce him through, unless, he thought, I twist myself. He'd seen cats fly through the air. They were always able to turn and land on their feet. If he landed on his side, there was a chance he'd fall into the gap between the stakes. He twisted his body, only to find he was now falling back first. He glimpsed the natives at the edge of the hole, angry faces glaring down as they waited for his death. Desperate, he twisted again. He'd die with his murderers as his final sight. At the last moment, he rotated and fell between the stakes. One glanced off his mask, knocking it askew. Then he thudded against the ground on his right shoulder. He lay there for several seconds, gasping for breath. His attackers let out a disappointed groan. Objects poked into his flesh. He couldn't see, so he pulled his mask down to his neck. He shuffled around, creating a clatter. He was lying on a bed of bones. Human? Or animals? Beetles ran here and there, and a green scaly lizard scampered away, its tail zagging wildly. One native shouted, and Modo expected to feel a spear puncture his vital organs. Look death in the eye, he decided. He turned over onto his back, bones aching, and stared up at his soon-to-be murderers. The tribesmen let out a cry of terror. One began wailing and pulling at his dark, curly hair. Another flung away his spear, covered his eyes, and fell to the ground. What is it? Modo looked over his shoulder, expecting some tiger or monstrous creature to be standing there. He turned back just as the remaining tribesmen dropped to their knees and then, he assumed, to the ground. He could no longer see any of them over the edge of the pit. After a moment's pause, he stood, legs shaking. The pit was at least 12 feet deep, and the natives appeared to be gone. Maybe they'd backed away. Or it was a trap. They might spring on him. Sturdy vines hung down at one corner of the pit, over the reddish-brown soil. They must have been used by the natives to descend and butcher their kills. He yanked two of the stakes from the ground, tucked them in his belt for weapons, and climbed the vines, his mask swinging on his neck. Near the top, he held the sharpened bamboo in front of him, then poked his head out warily. He was stunned to find the tribesmen still on the ground, some shivering and kneeling, their dark skin painted with white lines and handprints. Others were prostrate, flaps of leather clothing covering their backsides. One looked up, his face marked with a series of white leopard-like spots. He muttered a cry of alarm and lowered his head again. Modo pulled himself out of the hole and dropped the stakes. Only moments ago they had been hunting him like a wild beast, and now they were bowing before him. What had changed? He wiped the sweat from his eyes, and his hands felt his fallen-in nose, the mangled chin, the bumps across his cheeks. They were seeing his face for the first time. He stood absolutely stupefied, and it was all he could do not to fall over. They'd actually been brought to their knees by his ugliness. To their knees! He wanted to pull out his hair. He felt a scream building deep inside him, a scream that had been waiting in his soul, in his heart, since birth. Instead, he let out a sudden hiccup of a laugh, tinged with madness. Several warriors shivered visibly and covered their ears. "Am I so ugly?" he asked them. He picked up one of their spears, saw that its shaft was held by a wooden extension used to make the throw even stronger. A clever device. They'd been carrying wooden shields, too. He picked one up. It was carved with an image that had been outlined in white lines, a representation of a supremely ugly face. He nearly dropped the shield. The features on it were similar to his own. "Alas, poor Yorick," he quoted. "I knew him, Horatio. A fellow of infinite jest, of most excellent fancy." He paused, then let out another bark of laughter that echoed in the forest. "Don't you know Shakespeare?" He tossed the shield aside. For a third time he laughed, then cut it short. "Modo, you self-pitying fool. Behaving like a madman won't help you. You'll just be dragged off to Bedlam." He didn't stop to consider just who would actually take him to Bedlam from here. Once again he looked down in disbelief at the prostrate natives. None even dared to peek at him. But one pair of eyes didn't look away. A girl, no more than 10 years old, stood about 20 paces from him, mostly hidden in the folds of a fern. She straightened her back, pushed aside the leaves, and walked toward Modo, even though the warriors whispered admonishment and waved her away. The girl's curly hair was white as snow, her dark skin painted with intricate spiderweb lines. She strode fearlessly between the men, not taking her eyes off Modo. She stopped in front of him. "Who are you?" he asked. She replied with several words that made no sense. Seeing that he wasn't understanding her, she paused and pointed at the canopy of trees with her little finger and said what sounded like, "Jiri, jiri." Then she pointed at him with the same little finger. "What do you mean?" She pointed skyward again. "Dare." "I fell from the sky, yes, that's right." He wondered if that was it. Had they seen the airship battle? They would have heard it, at least. All that strange thunder above them. Then a man falls from the sky and lands in the middle of their hunting grounds. No, not a man. A god. After all, he fell from the sky. He chuckled to himself. "Me, a god. Ha!" But the warriors remained prostrate, had been cowering before him for some 10 minutes now. It was the way emperors and kings were treated not so long ago, he'd read. Modo pointed at his chest. "Modo," he said. "Me, Modo." The girl had a brilliant spark of intelligence in her eyes. She pointed at herself with her little finger. "Nulu," it sounded like. She pointed at him again. "Me, Modo." "Modo," he repeated. "Modo." She nodded and let out a little huff of satisfaction. "Modo. Modo." She pointed at herself. "Nulu." "Nulu," he said. The smile that appeared on her face made him want to hug her. She started babbling ever so quickly, gesturing at the sky and then at him and the forest and back at the warriors. Then she made a circle with her hands. Modo held up his hand and she stopped babbling. "I have no idea what you are saying," he spoke slowly and more loudly than usual. "Tell them to get up," he said, pointing at the warriors. She stared uncomprehendingly at him. Then it dawned on him. She was looking at his face without grimacing. In fact, he would have described her as looking blissful, as though she were staring at something she'd wanted to see for her whole life. Blissful. He really was going out of his mind. He gestured upward several times, saying, "Get up! Get up!" Nulu stood beside him, imitating his actions but speaking in her language. One warrior raised his head and looked at Modo and Nulu. He whispered to his companions, and they all got warily to their feet. They were taller than Modo, much taller than he'd expected them to be. He'd always thought of these uncivilized tribes as being short and stout, but these men were even taller than Mr. Socrates. White handprints ran along their bodies and faces. A few had clearly dined a little too heartily, but most of them were slim and muscular. They kept their eyes cast down as though chastised. "What am I to do with you now?" Modo asked.